And happy Friday as we are wrapping up week three of the fantasy baseball season. It's April 18th. I'm Adam Azer with Scott White and Al Melchior. Gentlemen, good morning.
Hello.
Adam Azer.
I wish you a good morning today. I will wish you a good afternoon on the podcast on Monday. I have an important programming announcement for everyone. Write it down. Thank you. Oh, yeah, thank you. This just did. This news bulletin. We are going to have a late podcast on Monday because we are going to have an early video show on Monday because we have an early start time on Monday. First pitch, I think, is at 11 Eastern. So our show, our video show, is going to be at 10 a.m. Eastern instead of the regular noon, which means our podcast will be sometime in the early afternoon. Probably around, we'll probably record around noon. I'm thinking like 1:30-ish out there ready for everybody's consumption. I apologize for that, but if you want your start sit advice, you're just going to have to come to the website at 10 Eastern and watch the show. But today
we give a lot of it on the Friday podcast.
We do. We're going to do that today. We're going to do hitting starter sit, pitching starter sit. We talk about Danny Salazar, CeCe Sabathia, Brian Dozier, Carlos Santana. Been neglecting the emailers a little bit, so I got a lot of emails in the show. FantasyBaseball@CBSI.com. And here we go. Stat of the day, number one. Toronto's relief pitchers combined for 8 walks in the 8th inning of Game 2 of yesterday's doubleheader, and Sergio Santos threw 3 wild pitches that scored runs.
It's going Rick Ankiel on us.
That was weird. And you know what? Casey Jansen had a setback. He has tightness in his back, so...
Yeah, like, he must have heard that and started to freak out.
He
started
still...
to think, I can do this. I can keep this job.
But he's still the guy, right?
I mean,
despite this. Okay, so I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah.
Stat of the day number 2, Hyunjin Ryu has thrown 28 consecutive scoreless innings on the road, and 26 of them this season. 7 scoreless yesterday at San Francisco, 4 hits, 1 walk, 3 strikeouts. He is off to a great start. He has gone 7 innings without allowing an earned run in 3 of his 4 starts. The other one was just a bad one.
Yeah.
What do you guys think about Ryu?
I like what you said. I think probably it was after his previous start about how you think maybe he's kind of on the Yu Darvish-ish route.
Okay.
That was bad.
What I said was on the video show. It was the segment, What We May Have Been Wrong About. And I thought maybe I was too low on him because Kuroda and Darvish, I don't know if there was another one I had in there, both had big increases in strikeout. Well, not big increases, but increases in strikeouts, decreases in walks and whip in their second years. So I don't know if Ryu goes that route, but I really like him.
Yeah, I don't, you know, I'm still not convinced that he's going the big time strikeout route, but just in terms of just improving in his second year, we've seen the pattern before. So, you know, he's been really good so far.
Scott, Alex Wood, stat of the day number 3. Alex Wood, 8 innings, 8 hits, 1 run, 1 walk, 7 strikeouts at Philadelphia last night. The 10th time in 15 games that an Atlanta starting pitcher has allowed 1 or 0 runs. That's amazing.
They should be better than 10-5, right?
I guess. I guess. That's pretty...
Yeah.
10-5 is not bad.
And Wood is the one that I think has raised his stock the most because of this. Wood, I think, SPARP appeal or not, is close to being a must-start pitcher now because he's getting innings. I think all but one of the starts he's pitched deep into the game. He's gotten strikeouts the last 2. He looks really good.
Do you consider him a sell-high candidate?
Maybe in the leagues where the SPARP thing doesn't matter.
So
to a degree,
he
is.
Let me look at where you guys have him ranked in Roto.
Yeah.
49th for Scott, 57th for Al. Herc's got him 38th. You think Herc's too high on him?
No, I was just going to say I think I need to follow Herc's lead and move him up.
Who do I have right ahead of him?
Yordano Ventura and Scott Kazmir and C.J. Wilson and Ubaldo Jimenez.
Yeah, in a Roto league, I'd still rather have those, all 4 of those.
All right, well, those are the 3 stats of the day. Here's trade of the century. Earlier in the season, Adam Azer traded traded Danny Salazar to Al Melchior.
Traded the
for
century.
Sonny Gray. Now, let's talk about Danny Salazar.
Yeah, let's talk about him, because this is starting to get pretty interesting.
Let me give the line real quick. 4 and 2/3, 6 hits, 5 runs, 3 walks, 3 strikeouts at Detroit. And Al gave me a little IM yesterday in like the 3rd inning. Danny Salazar is looking good.
He was. I could have sent you that one in the fourth inning even.
Yeah. And I said, I'm rooting for him. You know, I'm not rooting against him here.
I thought maybe you were going to reveal to people that I, after that, sent you an IM saying that my lunch made me gassy and I was going to walk over to your cube.
No, I didn't.
Oh, well, no, I just did.
Al had the fiber diet yesterday. So who's worried about Danny Salazar?
Well, first of all, what he said after the game I thought was telling, because he did get off to a great start, first three innings, and then he said he walked a guy, and that caused him to start wondering if maybe he wasn't he was off mechanically, and he said he started overthinking everything about his arm slot and just started – it just became completely wild from that point forward. So it seems like early in his career there may be some mental hurdles he needs to overcome, which we don't talk about much here because it's usually not something you can see in the stats. But Mike Minor is a good example of a pitcher who had mental hurdles early in his career. In his case, every time he gave up a base runner, he – thought he basically felt like the world was crashing down on him and would give up home runs and just it was just ugly to start his career. So maybe there's some of that going on. But I don't know. Just because the velocity has been so different from where it was last year, 3 miles per hour lower average fastball, and because control is an issue, part of me wonders if, and, you know, I'm not trying to incite panic or anything, but it almost has the look of a pitcher who is on the verge of finding out he has an arm injury.
Well, he already had Tommy John, right?
Yes, several years ago.
Not to say he can't have Tommy John, but John again, that's like the trend this year. In fact, Josh Johnson might be headed that way for his second Tommy John. Yeah, my take on the velocity, Scott, was it's early, it was cold, it's April. Yesterday looked like a pretty nice day. I don't know. My thought was it would get there, but 3 miles per hour is a lot, right?
Sure. I'd say even at this time of year, it's a little on the high side. It's a little bit on the alarming side. And with each successive start where it's in that 93-ish range, I'm going to get more and more worried because, yeah, after the first start or two, it's like, ah, it's April.
Right.
There's
right.
time.
Exactly.
But, yeah, it doesn't seem to – I haven't looked at the numbers, but it doesn't seem like it's going up. And, yeah, it's going to be harder for him – to get away with some of the command issues when they crop up.
So
they,
would you do that trade again now, or have you changed?
No, I think I still would. And I mean, I also made the comment here. I don't think it was a bad trade. I think for me, it was an unnecessary trade.
Right.
But you know, would I do it again? Yeah, I probably would. I'm holding out some hope, but yeah, with each successive start, both with in terms of the velocity, and in terms of the command issues, you know, I may be ready to revise that two or three starts from now.
So if you're just using these guys as starting pitchers, who would you rather have, Alex Wood or Danny Salazar?
Right now, Alex Wood.
Like for the rest of the season?
Yeah.
All right.
I think I might have Salazar ahead still. And I don't think you should sell low on him,
no.
Even though I do have legitimate concerns. But I am to the point where, kind of like Ubaldo Jimenez, I'm benching him until he shows me something.
But Al, so just whatever property of math that would be, that to me says you like Alex Wood better than Sonny Gray.
Transitivity.
There it is. That's what I thought.
Yes.
Okay.
That's a big turnaround because I think you were the highest on Gray of any of us.
Yeah.
He's off to a very good start.
Yeah, and I'm a little distrustful of Gray, and that's part of the reason, too, why you know I have my concerns about Salazar, too. I still have my concerns about Gray, and it's with him, it's also command. And I'm afraid one of these starts coming up, that's going to come and bite him someplace.
All right. Boldface lie of the
Where
day.
Where exactly?
Yeah. Boldface lie of the day comes from Juan Washington. He said, quote, "It's nothing that has crossed my mind," end quote. And that was his thoughts on sending Tanner Shepherds back to the bullpen. It had to at least cross his mind.
Yeah, especially when it looked like Matt Harrison was coming back next week. He might have given it a thought or two.
And Shepherd said he's not worried about it either.
Boldface lie of the day number two.
Yeah. I don't know. Washington says it's a work in progress, but I'm just not confident there's going to be enough progress to make it worthwhile in fantasy. And if ever there is, I think it's something now we can cross that bridge when we come to it.
Did anything really, really jump out at you guys yesterday that we haven't covered so far before we get into some emails? And I have some fun stuff today. Drop or hold crazy stats and what they mean, and you know, the usual.
Well, I'm going to throw out a couple of Marlins related things because there's a, like you said, there's a lot going on. A lot of it I know we're getting to, so I'm going to hold off. But listening to local radio yesterday, GM Dan Jennings was on, and he said that they're you know, they're anticipating the return of Rafael for Kyle, so they're playing Derek Dietrich third at short. And it kind of, I'd sort of forgotten Dietrich came up as a shortstop. And I don't trust Adin Echevarria's hot start. So if you've got Dietrich in a deeper league, and we've been encouraging people to pick him up in deeper leagues, hold on to him. Because I really think there's a chance that at some point he could be the Marlins' everyday shortstop.
Okay.
Not to mention second base if Vercal gets hurt again.
Well, even with Echevarria's defense?
Yeah, I mean, they love it. I mean, the metrics don't particularly love his defense, but obviously that's not as important in terms of, you know, how he gets playing time. But, yeah, I feel like he could be enough of a liability offensively that they, you know, they'll want. Dietrich has proven that he can add some punch to the lineup, and that's a lineup that still needs it a little bit.
And if they're willing to shift Dietrich around, I mean, Casey McGee's no mainstay at third base, so right. Between the three positions, he could – remain useful. Dietrich could.
All right. Anything
else? There's one real quick Marlins thing. Andrew Haney, and I forget which writer it was, but it was an MLB.com writer, wrote in a mailbox column that he expects Haney could be up in June.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I wanted to touch on Chris Colabello because it came up on yesterday's Fantasy Baseball Today. We kind of lumped him in with Justin Smoke as guys we were over. Ready to move on from. And yesterday, doubleheader, he had a good day and now has three straight multi-hit games.
And he leads the American League in RBI.
He does lead the American League in RBI, still on pace for 205 of those.
Nice!
So it, in addition to, you know, three multi-hit games and some doubles going on there, he also has three walks during that stretch after just one in his first 11. So that's kind of more in line with what he did last year. As bad as he was at the plate, he drew some walks, and he drew walks in the minors too, where his numbers were absurd. So the fact that he's still hitting well now, 321 batting average, I think it is. No, that's not right. But he's hitting well. He's hitting over 300. And getting extra base hits, drawing some walks, and just with the minor league tracker, he's still somebody to keep an eye on. He could be. I'm not ready to pass on him as a potential breakout candidate.
Colabello is hitting .357
okay.
right now. So, yeah, he's off to a very good start and got back into the productive columns yesterday. All right, email of the day number one is from Jervs. He says, why all the talk about Cueto being a health risk? Other than 2013, he only had one season with less than 30 starts. Also, he hasn't had an ERA above 3 since 2010, and even then, that was a respectable 3.64. But if you're going to trade him, what would be a group of hitters you would pursue for Johnny Cueto?
Well, if 30 starts is like all it takes for you to trust that a guy's like a durable workhorse, then I guess he passes the test, but...
Yeah,
how many 180 inning seasons has he had? Just two, I think.
Oh, I can check that. But
yeah, I thought it was more.
He also when you look at his season stats year by year, he got hurt in the playoffs two seasons ago, right? First round of the playoffs, first game he pitched, I think, and that was a series that they lost in five to the Giants, if I remember correctly. So, you know, there is another injury there. And then last year he kept getting injured.
Right.
And then, you know, there was this whole thing about his throwing motion.
Well, those are the two points I was going to bring up.
Right.
Yeah.
And he's got this weird motion where he sort of turns all the way around. 180 inning seasons. Yeah, only two. You're right.
That's really surprising to me, actually.
Well, that's but why we've been calling him an injury risk.
They are two of the more recent seasons.
Yeah.
It's just he's so – I guess that he wasn't always so efficient, but he is now such an efficient pitcher.
No, I mean, still 30 starts. He would... I mean, a top-of-the-rotation guy should be getting at least 32. A lot of times he gets 33 or 34.
Is that a huge difference between that and 30?
It's enough to downgrade him a tier, I think.
That's fair. I think the throwing motion and the persistent injuries last year and the injury in the playoffs are a factor here. But if you were going to trade him for a group of hitters, who would you pursue?
Well, you should get more than he's worth right now. The kind of start he's off to, you should sell high on him. So I think you could sell him as a legitimate ace and maybe get, you know, it depends on what your position of need is, but let's just go first base, since obviously everybody can use a first base to play utility. I would probably aim up for like the Albert Pujols range at least. I don't know that you could get Freeman, but you may be able, like, if you could get Prince Fielder, I don't think that's so far-fetched. That'd be great.
I was about to say the same thing. I think you could get Encarnacion or Fielder in a lot of leagues. Like, I know you guys wouldn't make that deal, but I wouldn't be the least bit shocked to see that kind of trade go down to get Encarnacion or Fielder for Cueto right now, and it'd be a no-brainer, right?
It would be a no-brainer to do. I wasn't even thinking that high, and it can't hurt to ask.
Right, exactly.
But let's say that you're in a league, you know, where no owner's going to bite on that. I was thinking more the Shinsu Chu, Matt Holliday neighborhood. I would be willing to settle for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
okay.
Fair. That's good. That's probably fair value. I was thinking more in the sell high sense.
Yeah, but it is also a sell high just in that you're getting like a fifth round pick or whatever for like your 12th round pick.
Right.
Yep.
So you've upgraded in that regard. And you're probably stronger in pitching.
I have legitimately moved Cueto up since the start of the season. He's now 28th for me. When I think on draft day, he was in the 40s.
Right. All right, email of the day number 2 is from Brian H. Do you buy or sell Alexi Ramirez as a top 12 shortstop this season in a roto league?
I do, and I'll double-check my rankings, but I'm pretty sure I actually do have him. I think I've got him 12th or 13th, so, you know.
Did you have a rankings adjustment day, Al? I know you wanted to dedicate some time to that.
Yeah, no, I did a couple days ago, and then
good for you.
Did a little more yesterday, so I've got him 13th in Roto.
Okay,
so
I have him 15th, but it's a situation where the few guys ahead of him, Jed Lowry, J.J. Hardy, even like Starlin Castro, I could see him outperforming.
Right,
it's just I think those guys have a little more upside.
Email of the day number 3 is from Jeremy from Dallas. He says, "Dear Andrew, Robinson, and Shinsu." Who's Andrew? I don't know.
Andrew McCutcheon.
Oh, okay. That helps. That works. "I've got Skaggs, but Gregory Polanco is available in my 12-team Roto League. Should I drop Skaggs for him? I haven't heard you talk much about Polanco. But other podcasts are in love with the guy. I trust you guys the most. Thank you, Jeremy. And would you make that move, dropping Skaggs for Polanco? And if not, should I grab Ivan Nova instead?"
I, you know, this is a good question because I really feel like it could go either way. In a 12-team league, I feel like both Polanco and Skaggs are right on the borderline of somebody I would consider rostering. I think gut check here, I wouldn't do it. I like Skaggs. I've turned the corner on him. I think I want to see what he could do. But I wouldn't fault anybody for making that move.
It might depend somewhat on need. I'm a little more inclined to do it since it's a roto league and there's less demand for starting pitching than in a head-to-head league. But, you know, if I had a stacked outfield, and I think the thing we're counting on Polanco to contribute in most this year is steals. If I didn't really need steals, I would probably stick with Skaggs. But it's not in any way a crazy move, especially since Skaggs has had a couple shaky starts in a row.
Email of the day number 4 is from Brian. "Announcement: Carlos Santana is freaking awful. Carry on."
You know, he's been just based on what was coming through my Twitter feed yesterday, he is the most people are more down on him than any other player, it seems like.
Even Danny Salazar. I mean, it was a rough day for the Indians.
I got like 3 separate tweets about what's wrong with Carlos Santana. Why don't you guys talk about Carlos Santana? I can't believe I drafted Carlos Santana. And I don't really understand why, because he's no better than a 260 hitter. We know this by now. And a 260 hitter, to get to 260, is going to go through some extreme up and downs, probably. The fact that he's still walking a lot,
yeah,
it saves him a good bit in head-to-head leagues. And honestly, I think it's no reason to complain if he's doing this poorly and still contributing like he is. In the long run, I think he's going to be fine. He has said he's dealing with, I think it's a groin injury, just a little thing. Obviously, it's not enough to keep him out of the lineup. But maybe they rest him for a couple days, and once he gets over that, that's when he turns things around.
Yeah, sorry. I'm trying to look up something from 2012 because I remember him getting off to a terrible start in 2012.
While you look that up, then I'll just mention that I actually did blog on Santana yesterday and we talked about some of the guys that were in our isolated power trailer board that we had on our Fantasy Baseball Today yesterday. And I'm not worried about Santana either. He's mostly a BABIP victim so far. You don't expect a ton of homers from him. You look for the doubles. And, yeah, he's had some apparent bad luck on balls in play. That's going to affect his doubles total. So I think he'll come around.
All right, and then moving on to email of the day number 5 is from Chuck in the UK. It'll get us into our drop or hold section. And Chuck says, I'm a second-year player in a 12-team 5x5 Roto League. Admittedly, last year I began dropping players too early in the season. I regretted it in the end. So this year I've imposed a rule on myself to not make any more moves other than DL placements until mid-April. My question relates to when is it too soon to give up on a player, specifically Nick Swisher. Is it too soon to cut bait and move on? Options on the waiver wire include Uribe, Moustakas, and Connor Gillespie.
With those options, I would not cut Swisher, but I myself have cut Swisher in one league already.
But not a Roto League. It was a points league, right?
It was a points league.
Yeah, a Roto league where you've got 5 outfielders and a corner infield and a middle infield. Like, you're not dropping Swisher.
But don't short sell him too much in a points league either, because that's actually where he's better suited.
No, but it's a smaller
roster. I get your point. I'm just saying, with the smaller rosters, think twice. I wouldn't drop him for any of those three.
I think Chuck's issue here, because if it's a 12-team 5x5 league, I feel like there should be better players than Uribe and Gillespie on waivers, and that he's kind of just sorting by what they've done so far. And since those guys have high batting average, they're showing up higher. I think maybe just the more you play, the more years you get into it, the more you learn how extreme the highs and lows can be over the course of the season, and the more you learn just what each player does, because there may be just a lack of familiarity with the types of players these players are and what their numbers you can expect them to settle into, you'll be able to have a little more confidence in these decisions you make. Because I don't think Swisher's undroppable. I would probably hold on to him in a Roto League no matter what, but I don't like the self-imposed rule of just dropping nobody until mid-April, because if everybody else in your league is playing, I mean, there's guys at the start of the year who get off to a good start and nobody drafted them, and they really do end up having a breakout season. And if you're not willing to be a little flexible with some of your bottom-end guys, you're going to miss out on all of them.
Exactly. You've got like the last few guys on your roster or the ones that you've just recently picked up. I add and drop those guys all the time. Sometimes I make mistakes. 2 days ago, I dropped Kyle Gibson in a couple leagues, and now I'm regretting it.
I don't think that was a mistake, though.
I don't think it was either.
But deep leagues.
All right, fair enough.
16-team league. I dropped them for Carlos Martinez.
Okay, so, yeah, I made a mistake.
We'll talk more about Gibson because he's off to a great start. This is what I wanted to look up for Carlos Santana. I don't know if you interpret this as good news or bad news. 2012, April 5th through July 17th. So it lasted a while. 221, 348 on base, which is great for a 221 batting average, but a 329 slugging percentage. So he was horrible. From July 18th on, 285, 382, 514. So he was an all-star, basically. But it lasted a while. But he'll get hot. I guess that was the point I was trying to make. So with that email from Chuck in the UK, we play drop or hold. And you guys tell me if you think, look, deep leagues, obviously, this game probably doesn't apply. I get that. But Jason Castro in a one-catcher league, he's got 3 home runs, but hitting just .213, 2 home runs in his last 6 games. Drop or hold if you see Mesoraco, Zanino, or Deonor Navarro out there on waivers.
I'm holding because I like Mesoraco the best of that group, and I feel like he's Castro's equal. So might as well just stick with him.
R.A. Dickey is next. Sorry, I want to get you time to talk about your hitting planner.
Okay.
So
I was going to disagree, but
R.A. Dickey is next.
It's been registered.
Drop or hold R.A. Dickey, who has 1 good start and he's allowed 5 earned runs or more in the other 3.
I am going to hold Dickey, but I'm definitely benching him.
Yeah, it had to be Scott. It's always Scott. That one's getting tweeted about.
What?
Nothing.
Nothing.
We need to move along.
That's the game. I didn't say his name, right?
You said, I'm going to hold Dickie. You could have said it in a less suggestive way.
You're always holding up the sheet of paper that says last names, Adam.
I know. All right, sorry. Go ahead. You going to hold Dickie?
Yes. I'm benching him, but I'm holding him. And I don't have a lot of confidence in him, to be completely honest. But I know there's definite upside there. And I trust that he'll eventually put a string of good starts together. And when he does that, I can probably sell high on him. So even in shallower leagues, I don't think there's enough pitching out there for me to give up on him completely.
Drop or hold Chris Davis out in a three outfielder league. Chris with a K. No home runs yet.
Yeah, those are coming. I'm holding.
Justin Smoke, 59% owned. Last 8 games, 5-for-9, homerless, no RBI. Would you drop Justin Smoke if you see Colabello out there?
Yeah.
Me too.
Would you drop Smoke for Morneau?
No.
Yeah, probably not.
Would you drop him for Yonder Alonso?
No, not at all.
But in general, you're okay dropping him if there's something good out on waivers?
Yeah. Yeah, I pretty much have already.
Kyle Seager, 93% owned. Shallow league. You don't have to start a corner infielder.
He's not a chance. I'm dropping him.
All right.
Not a chance.
Just, goodbye, low guy, Kyle Seager?
I recently moved Anthony Rendon ahead of him, so I think he is outside my top 10 third baseman in all formats, but not far. And, yeah, he's a goodbye low candidate. I would be fine with him if he was my starter at third base.
Let's look at the injuries, news, and notes, part one. Hanley Ramirez could return to the lineup today. Joe Kelly on the DL with a hamstring strain. Any update on that situation?
I have not seen anything official, but all indications are that it is Tyler Lyons for the time being.
Manny Machado close to beginning a rehab assignment. Jose Reyes will return tomorrow. Chase Headley believes his bicep strain is related to his sore knee now.
Here we go.
Yeah, now I'm getting angry.
He did pinch hit yesterday.
Great. Good for him. Congratulations.
Is it just that keeps making excuses?
It's like now there's another knee thing? Come on.
Oh.
Get healthy. Be productive. Oh,
I thought he was referring to last year's knee thing. But no, that would make more sense.
Yeah.
That
did not occur to me.
Oh, yeah. I interpreted it as he has a knee thing now.
Okay.
A sore knee, not like a huge knee injury or anything, but... Okay. I guess, honestly, we don't know enough about the situation. Lorenzo Cain on the DL. Should we pick up Jerod Dyson?
If you need steals, pick him up.
It's pretty much all you can rely on him for, right?
Correct.
Doug Fister could be back May 7th. Taylor Jordan was terrible last night, so do you feel good about Tanner Roark keeping that job?
I do. The one thing I was looking out for with Taylor Jordan was more strikeouts, because the national staff seemed to think that he was on the verge of doing better in that area. Same old Taylor Jordan. So ground ball pitcher, not a lot of Ks. I think Roark, gives you more.
Nick Franklin was in the lineup again yesterday at second base with Robinson Cano DHing. Corey Hart homered in the outfield. I think we'll talk a little more about Hart in a second. Oh, no, we won't. If you want to say anything about Hart, speak now or forever hold your peace. Or Franklin.
Well, I do think Hart is still a little undervalued, and he seems to be heating up with back-to-back two-hit games. I like the Mariners matchups this week, but he just missed my top 10 sleepers because he hasn't been playing quite every day, sitting every third or fourth game, it seems like. If that turns around, though, and his performance could cause that, he could be pretty high-end.
There have been a lot of stories about Yasiel Puig lately and how he was able to get over to the United States from Cuba. It's kind of a sensitive subject, but are you worried at all right now about the off-field distractions? And another thing with Puig is, like, he tried to make a basket catch yesterday, and he dropped it. And he still was able to get a runner out at second base, but there's just a lot of – I just feel like there are a lot of things with Puig.
Yeah.
So are you worried in that sense?
I'm not, only just because I'm sure that everything that could be impacting Puig now could have impacted him last year.
Okay.
And – so I'm not pleased with the start, but you know, he was streaky last year too, and I think overall he'll be okay.
Should Joel Hanrahan be on our radar as a potential saves guy?
I did pick him up in our deep AL only analyst league just in case. I mean, the White Sox obviously have a glaring need at closer. I couldn't pick him up in the NL because since he was with Boston last year, he's only in the AL pool. Otherwise, I would too because the Mets have been rumored to be interested. So, yeah, I would say that's a yes. But it's kind of on the lower end as far as priorities go.
And David Ortiz was robbed of a home run by Adam Eaton last night. And I'm not going to give anything away, but I made a bold prediction about David Ortiz 2 days ago on the video show. And we will have something today to illustrate it. So tune in for that. Most added lists. I forgot to print it out for you, and I apologize. So I will read it to you, and you tell me what stands out. First five, Jesse Chavez, 77% owned. Devin Mesoraco, 64% owned. Robbie Erlin, 43% owned. Garrett Richards, 76%. Alfredo Simone, 35% owned.
Okay.
Yeah.
Scott. Well, I'll go ahead and make my point about Mesoraco now.
Yeah, oh, cool. There you go.
Because he's still so...
See, I knew it would all work out in the end.
He's still so widely available. And he, yeah. And he is performing so well right now. And I think Al did say that Castro and Mesoraco were about even in terms of upside. And I think he's probably right. I do still technically rank Castro ahead. And we could put Yan Gomes in that same category, actually. But... if it is a shallower league where he's available, only one catcher, if he's lasted this long on waivers, I feel like you could drop Castro or Gomes and not have to worry about him being picked up. So you could, might as well just ride the hot hand and swap it out later if that proves necessary.
All right, anything else from that top five? Chavez, Erlins, Richards, Simone?
Yeah, Chavez is interesting to me because when he was going into his two-start pitcher week this week, his percentage, I think, was 62%. So it continues to rise, even though he has a one-start week coming up. Although I think he faces the Astros, so it's essentially a two-start week. But
18 strikeouts for him?
Right, that's what I'm saying, yeah. But no, I still find it interesting that his popularity continues to climb.
All right, 6 through 10, Willie Peralta, Jason Hamill, Scott Feldman, Zach McAllister, Connor Gillespie. Anything?
Well, this is most added, you said?
Most added.
Yeah, it's interesting that Feldman is still on there. I don't know that it's had a chance to reflect yet his start yesterday because he finally came back down to earth. Allowed 9 hits, I think it was, after allowing no more than 3 in his first 3 starts, which was amazing. But obviously, that's more the Feldman we know. Strikeout-to-walk ratio actually looks bad by his standards. And I'll remind everybody that he had a 2.19 ERA after 8 starts last year and obviously ended up being not such a useful mixed league guy. So
yeah.
Let's not go overboard with him.
Would you rather have any of these three over Kyle Gibson, who's 25% owned? Peralta, Jason Hamill, Scott Feldman.
Peralta.
Absolutely Peralta. I'm kind of borderline with Feldman. I mean, I don't think he's great in the mixed league sense, but I don't think Gibson is either. I think just because Gibson has a little bit of more of the unknown going for him and that he was a top prospect, I'd rather go with him than Feldman.
Would you rather have Gibson or Edinson Volquez, who's also among the most added?
I would rather have Gibson, but for the first time in seemingly decades, I have some interest in Volquez.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting strikeout walk ratio, very non-Volquez-like.
Yeah. Here are some of the most dropped players. Erasmo Ramirez down to 42%, and makes sense. He's been bad. Ubaldo Jimenez down 16% to 73% ownership. Justin Smoke down 15% to 59%. Josh Reddick is down to 39% ownership. Casey McGee down to 46% ownership. So Erasmo, Ubaldo, Smoke, Reddick, and McGee. Would you advise owners to chill out and not drop them, just stash instead?
Only Ubaldo.
I agree. And I don't know what's going on with Erasmo Ramirez. I had a lot higher hopes for him. And I don't know if he's just one of these young players that just is going to take a long time to develop or if it's just never going to happen. But that's been a disappointment.
All right, I'm going to skip around here, guys, and let you do your planner stuff now. We can help people out for Fantasy Week 4. But, you know, keep it somewhat snappy so we can
all right, then.
Talk about Sabathia and Uehara is back so you can drop Mujica. you know what? There's nothing like super, super important the rest of the show. I do want to talk about Sabathia.
I do too.
Yeah. So
you made it sound like there was so much, Adam.
There is a lot. It's Gallardo, Sabathia, Burnett, Verlander.
It's just a waste of everybody's time.
I want to get to the crazy stats section. I like that that section.
Okay.
But go ahead. Scott, you want to lead us off with the best hitting matchups and worst hitting matchups and who we could start and sit next week?
Yeah, I will, though I have to admit this kind of feels like a waste of everybody's time, too, because I went through this usual process I go every week, picking out the best and worst schedules, picking out hitters it may affect, lefty-righty stuff. And there's just not enough that stands out for me to have to find a sleeper I'm really all that jazzed about. And look, I'm always of the belief that you should start your studs anyway, so there may only be one spot you're looking at in your lineup for a potential sleeper anyway. But this may not be the week to go crazy over that. But I will get into it a little here. The best matchups, I'll rattle them off real quick. The Tigers have the best, then the Dodgers. The Athletics are good, but they do have three lefties, so that's not good for Brandon Moss. The Cubs are good, so maybe get Emilio Bonifacio back in. He's one of my top three sleepers, actually, for this week, after not liking him last week and him falling into a bit of a slump.
Okay.
And then the Diamondbacks are number five. The worst matchups, got the Twins, Braves, the Angels, Pirates, and the Marlins.
So would you sit Jason Hayward?
Would not sit Jason Hayward, no.
Okay.
He's actually outscored.
Shot down.
Well, he had over 20 points last week. I mean, he's off to a slow start, but he's producing. Yeah. As of yesterday, he had outscored Bryce Harper this year and Shin-Soo Chu.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, yeah, people just look at batting average and freak out, but there's more, obviously, to what a player does than that. And he could come around this week. You never know. Six righties for the Braves. Even though it's not a great matchup. But just to kind of further the initial point I was making, those five good matchups I listed, like there's not, I rank them one through five, but there's not really a lot of differentiation between the five. And teams like the Indians, the Royals, the Phillies, they all had good matchups too that could have conceivably been in that group of five. But I could only name five.
All right, so real quick, starter sit Moustakas.
Moustakas, I actually have him as my start third baseman this week, but it's largely due to a lack of alternatives at the position. I mean, that's why we see Trevor Plouffe getting picked up in so many leagues. People are desperate for help there more than any other position.
Who do you prefer, Plouffe or Moose?
Plouffe's actually my sit because I mentioned the Twins had the worst matchups this week going against the Rays and Tigers rotations.
You want to give us a few more sleepers?
Yeah, I will. One guy who I am kind of excited about this week is Daniel Murphy. And he's almost universally owned, but he's started in less than 70% of leagues, second base being such a deep position. The Mets face six right-handers in their seven games this week, and he is a guy who does have dramatic lefty-righty splits. And he's been hot recently, piling up multi-hit games. So after a slow start, he seems to be turning the corner and has the right matchups to keep it going. I like Michael Morse to bounce back this week. He has three games at Coors Field to open the week. I mentioned Bonifacio, Mesoraco. The Reds matchups aren't exceptional, but I think he's just too hot to sit right now. And I would kind of say the same thing about Eric Young, except I know a lot of people are going to have a hard time getting him in their lineup. You look at what he's done the last 2 weeks, points or roto. I mean, he is just on fire right now with all the steals he's getting. And I think if you need outfield help, he's somebody to look into.
Al, what do we need to know with pitchers?
There is a whole lot of two-star pitchers this coming week. Right now, there are 47.
Whoa.
And there's probably going to be 48 because Cole Hamels could be back Tuesday. That could give him two starts. He would obviously be a must-start if he does come back Tuesday. Or if he comes back at all next week, for that matter, one start or two. But yeah, 47 at least, 47 two-star pitchers next week. And most of them are pretty drecky.
Oh, yeah? So, I was going to say, like, I've looked ahead to my lineups this upcoming weekend. I don't have many two-star guys on my team.
Yeah, so I think it's important to note, because you can go on the waiver wire and say, like, wow, look at all these two-star pitchers. I'm going to load up. And I think you need to exercise some restraint this week, because in my weekly pitching column, I highlight 12 borderline pitchers. And for the first time, even though it's the largest number of two-star pitchers I've had to work with, it's the first time where I've really kind of held my nose with the last two or three on that list of 12 borderline guys. So the ones that I think you should start that aren't must-starts, Danny Salazar, I think, deserves another shot. Well, but again, when you look
that's
at the alternatives,
Royals, I think I'd just go with the one-star guy.
He's got the Royals and the Giants. I think those are pretty good matchups.
Yeah.
And I still like the potential. So, move forward with caution. But again, if you're looking for two starts, he's one of your better options. Clayball Colts, I think, is relatively safe this week. He's got the Orioles and the Blue Jays. Dan Straley, I would feel good about starting. Also, Dylan G and the aforementioned Willie Peralta with two starts. But again, G and Peralta are two of the ones I feel better about, and I think in other weeks they'd be much fringier. So guys that I would consider starting but would think better of it if I had better options available, Tanner Roark versus the Angels versus the Padres, Garrett Richards versus the Nationals at the Yankees, Henry Mejia and his blisters versus the Cardinals versus the Marlins. So good matchups there, but he's not going deep into games. Some control issues and the blisters, to me, make him still a fringy start. Wei-Yin Chen at the Red Sox versus the Royals. Travis Wood versus the Diamondbacks at the Brewers. This is where we're getting to territory here where guys you could consider, but I wouldn't really feel good about starting Travis Wood or Wei-Yin Chen, or for that matter, Zach McAllister, who's been good so far, versus the Royals at the Giants. And finally, R.A. Dickey. I'm benching him versus the Orioles and versus the Red Sox. He's kind of the last resort guy.
Okay.
I would even consider anybody beyond that, even including Volquez. Ian Kennedy's been better. Those guys have more to prove to me. I would not start them, period.
All right, Al, thank you very much. Now, those planners are available on the website, so if we didn't cover anything, they're extensive stuff, fantasynews.cbsports.com. Crazy stats. Brian Dozier has 5 home runs and 5 steals, and he's hitting .207.
That's pretty crazy.
He's the number one second baseman in fantasy. What do you guys think about Brian Dozier?
I still like him a lot, and I think the fact that he is so productive, even hitting .207, kind of makes my case for me that even when he's playing, he's not as hot as self, clearly. He's making a lot of outs, and I don't expect him to be quite this powerful all season, but between the steals, the walks, we haven't seen a lot of his doubles potential yet. He's a big doubles hitter. There's going to be enough production there for you to stick with him every week, I don't know that he's much better than a .250 hitter, quite honestly. But it's well-rounded production, and it adds up to a lot of points.
And you have him 12th in Roto, too.
Yeah.
And so does Al. Al's got him 14th in points and 12th in Roto. Scott's got Dozier 12th in both formats. So, all right, Dozier off to a great start. Good for you. Chris Colabello, we talked about. We can skip him. My crazy stat was that he leads the AL with 19 RBI. Nolan Arenado is batting .292 despite one walk and 10 strikeouts. That's a crazy stat.
I don't think so.
I don't think it's that crazy either. I just wanted to talk to him. Well, he's on an 8-game hitting streak. He's a top 8 third baseman. Go for it, Al.
Yeah, no, let's start with the 10 strikeouts and one walk, because the walks, I mean, sure, you'd like to see him walk more than that, but he's not going to walk very much. You're getting Arenado for batting average, in a points league, you're getting for the lack of strikeouts. 10 strikeouts in the 60, whatever at-bats he has is a pretty good ratio. And that, by the way, just further underscores the point that we made about guys like Andrelton Simmons, who aren't striking out at all. 10 strikeouts right now is a good ratio. Guys who have struck out 0, 1, 2, 3 times, mm-hmm. That's extraordinary. So, but a good rate for Arenado and hitting with more power. So, I think maybe on the verge of a breakout.
Hey, all right. Would love to see that. Ian Desmond, here's a crazy stat. He has 7 errors. He committed 2 more last night. I'm not happy about this.
I'm not happy. I'm a little bit worried because they've got the Nationals have infield depth.
Still? They do, but I mean, even Ian Desmond's one of their star players.
I'm less worried than, you know, like with Danny Espinosa, a couple years ago, but that's a lot of errors, and he's not doing that much offensively. If this really drags on for a long time, I just wonder if he's really that untouchable.
Yeah, he has no steals yet, batting .226, 3 home runs. So turn it around, Ian Desmond.
I think they'd try to trade him before they benched him. I mean, he's just too valuable offensively.
Yeah, hope so. Kevin Kuzminoff has a hit in all 8 games he's played. He's batting .414.
I have no idea what to make of this. This is a weird.
This
is a crazy
stat. Yeah.
It is kind of, but at the same time, like, he never quite lived up to his potential in the majors as a batting average guy. He had a year where he hit .379 before he was promoted, and his strikeouts were always way down in the minors too.
Can I ask you a question? Did you know that, or did you just look that up recently because he's hot? Because that is pretty impressive.
I didn't know the exact number, but yeah, I knew there was a lot of hype on him when he came up initially.
Yeah, you guys are impressive.
They called him the crushing Russian, and that's the main reason I'm excited about Kuzminov being hot right now, because I can say that name. I can say crushing Russian.
But there's no room for him.
The problem, right? Exactly. Like, even if I wanted to believe to some degree, and I don't exactly. I mean, his major league career has been kind of ploofian, if I can use that definition. But yeah, the fact that he's going to eventually cede the job to Beltre, and maybe he sticks around as like a platoon partner for Mitch Moreland.
Oh, I was just going with that route.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be enough to make a real fantasy impact. But by the way, I want to follow up on the Desmond thing, because I said they're more likely to trade him than bench him. I think there's like, what was the word you used? Infinitesimal?
On the show yesterday. Yeah, you did, yeah.
Yeah. Chance that either of those happens,
right?
Just to put that out there, and don't come to me, Nationals fans, and be like, they'd never trade Ian Desmond. I know they won it.
And I just want to point out that Kuzminov is not actually Russian.
He's not?
Macedonian.
Oh, but it doesn't really rhyme with anything, so
yeah.
Macedonia, where is that?
It's near Greece.
So he could be the crushing Prussian. Right? Was it part of Prussia?
I don't think so. No.
All right.
That'd be cool, though. Yeah. Kenley Jansen has allowed 5 earned runs this season after allowing just 16 all of last season. What a crazy stat. Sort of. Well, he struggled again yesterday. Anybody getting worried?
No, not really. I mean, I'm worrying about worrying, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
But no, I'm not worried yet.
And Lonnie Chisenhall has a .522 batting average, higher than Carlos Santana and Yan Gomes combined.
Yeah.
Do we think Chisenhall could become a factor?
He could. I'm not really counting on it now. They've already committed kind of to Santana at third base. And they're playing Chisenhall a lot at DH, but they have other guys they could rotate in there. And I just don't know that they're ever going to commit to him every day. Obviously, if he keeps hitting well, they'll have to, but I'm not sure I'm totally convinced of that either.
In today's rotation, we have James Shields, who was very good yesterday with 12 strikeouts at Houston, just like 6 against the normal team. John Lester, excellent against the White Sox. He's got a .217 ERA. Yovani Gallardo, another good start. 6 innings, 3 hits, 2 runs, 4 walks, 6 strikeouts. Now, Al, Yovani Gallardo swinging strikes in 4 games. He had a 0 against Boston, but 7, 9, and 8 in the other 3.
That's not okay? Bad. That's okay. That's okay. It's not dominant, but it's okay.
So maybe coming around on Gallardo?
Maybe. He got the 4 walks this time, though.
Right.
That looks a little more like Gallardo.
Yeah. But yeah, maybe coming around.
We have Sabathia, we have Burnett, and we have Verlander in here as well. Who do we want to highlight in our rotation?
I think it's worth highlighting all of them. I think it's worth highlighting Sabathia, because it was actually a good start this time. And he's kind of like Lincecum, where even though the velocity's way down, the strikeout to walk ratio has been impressive. And I'm starting to warm up to him a little because this was the first really good start, but the others were at least good enough that he was able to pitch deep into the game. And if he wouldn't be the first pitcher to reinvent himself from a power guy to more of a control guy. And the fact that he's still able to get the strikeouts as a control guy is encouraging. It's just all going to come down to, is he going to avoid getting hit enough to be a fantasy mainstay?
Right.
In terms of home runs and everything else, because the home runs have been up the last couple years. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, I'm not looking to drop him right now, so it's still a hold and wait and see situation, but I'm a little more encouraged now than I have been acting like I was earlier.
Okay, well, he's got Boston next week on the road. Start or sit. Last time he faced Boston, it was in Yankee Stadium. 7 innings, 6 hits, 4 runs, 2 walks, 9 strikeouts.
He's a borderline start, but you could start him.
Would you start him over some of those two start Willie Peralta or 1 start Sabathia?
My gut tells me Peralta, but it's funny because I actually have these all ranked, and I'm looking for where I've got Sabathia. It's in that neighborhood.
Okay. I think I would too.
Peralta?
Yeah, I would start Peralta. It might come down to just whether I thought I could afford to add one of these two-star guys. I could see myself starting a two-star Tanner Roark over him. I like the matchups enough. I kind of like Travis Wood, I think, more than Al does. But if I couldn't justify the roster space, I would be okay starting Sabathia.
Worried at all about David Price or Madison Bumgarner?
No, not based on those starts.
Fringy starting pitchers. These guys are owned in 2% to 61% of leagues. Scott Feldman, Kyle Gibson, Edinson Volquez, Ian Kennedy, Erasmo Ramirez, Franklin Morales. Feldman, Gibson, Volquez, Kennedy, Ramirez, Morales. Top three. We're at 51 minutes, by the way. So.
All right. So just figuring out the order. Sure, I'll go Gibson, Volquez, Kennedy.
I go Kennedy, Volquez, Gibson. So same three, but the backwards order. Kennedy's been showing something through his first 4 starts here. You know, he wasn't great after he went to the Padres last year, so I was ready to write him off, but it was a pretty small sample, and in the middle of a season, I don't know. There might be some room for a bit of a turnaround here.
All right. I kind of want to argue.
With Kennedy?
Yeah, but you don't seem like that gung-ho about it.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, I'm not rushing out to add him in any leagues. I'm just willing to acknowledge the possibility now.
What's your beef? Because I'm really encouraged by what Kennedy's done so far.
My beef is that it's 4 starts and he's mostly been bad in his career and he doesn't have great stuff.
Yeah.
So I just don't trust him. I mean, my beef is I just don't think he's that good.
Great stuff. I mean, his strikeout rate's always been pretty good. The main thing that's hurt him is home runs.
And last year
and
the walks too.
Some walks, yeah. And if, you know, going from Arizona to San Diego could theoretically take care of the home run thing, though we don't have a ton of evidence for that yet. He's only given up 1 home run this season, so that's encouraging.
Okay, but my beef is, like, even with his good start, he's only had, like, one really – well, his ERA is over 4 right now, so
right.
It's not like he's
– No, he's not.
Off to a great start.
He's not. But I'm just saying,
know.
Like, he's
that's fine.
He's in that same who's a good? He's in the same group with a Tanner Roark. I mean, I could live with him. I could live without him. Obviously, Kennedy has a little more strikeout potential than Roark, but he's not quite. He's not going to be as good, maybe in ERA and WHIP as Roark could be. So, it's just kind of a fringy. He's a fringy guy I would look at right now, as opposed to just completely ignoring him.
Fair. Very fair. Andrew McCutchen, Xander Bogaerts, and Robinson Cano hit their first homers of the season. Mike Napoli returned. Josh Johnson's going to see Dr. James Andrews. Shane Victorino could be back in a week. Clayton Kershaw making progress. Bruce Chen says he'll start Saturday. He was scratched yesterday. Travis Snyder batted 7th instead of 2nd, so that's not good for him. Michael Kadire left with a hamstring cramp. He's day-to-day. Angel Pagan day-to-day with knee soreness, and we are done. Watch Fantasy Baseball Today, live noon Eastern time. We'll talk to you then. For Scott White, now Melchior, Matt Amazer, have a great weekend. See you Monday. Late show Monday. Remember that.